huge hit before this. So I think this is February 2020. So at the in 2019, it's a huge hit. Maybe one of the biggest tracks of the year in dance. It was Brick Upon Brick. And so that song was all about phone scamming, which is sort of a bigger, been a big controversial thing in Jamaica in the past, last few years or whatever. And so in the track, he even plays news clips about how Jamaicans are phone scamming Americans. And then what? And then there's even this sort of thing where then they're recruiting their victims, the people they've scammed, they're recruiting them to scam other people and all that. So it's sort of a, like a cheeky, almost a bit, not a novelty song, but sort of probably a somewhat kind of a trying to jump on the zeitgeist with that. So that was a bit of fun, but I think then we move on to this, and then moved into the complete sublime with this one. Really fucking good. Now we're on to Sun Tzu. Oh, so this is Rebel Six, but the track's called Sun Tzu. Love this. This is an absolute anthem. So this is a Trinidad dance music. This is one of the big anthems, I think, when it was people outside of Trinidad were hearing about it. Got a weird, gorgeous open quality to his voice, Rebel. A bit like Mavado. So then it works great, the contrast between that inherent quality of his voice and then this hyper synthetic sheen he's getting out of it with the auto tune. Yeah, more of that bubble voice. Dude. Yeah. Great. Those drums coming in, so we're getting onto Alkaline with Twerk. They've got a little kind of funny jazzy piano line in this to give it a seductive edge. But I'm an absolute sucker for anything with a vaguely world music quality to it. So that's some of those drums in, and I'm sold already. I think in the book I call Alkaline, I call his voice a phallic tractor beam. So I think I'm probably a bit in line with that high promotion thing. I think it's me talking about him making kind of a girl tunes, but with these very kind of avant-garde vocals on the top. Kind of this futurized transhuman sexuality, and we've got another Alkaline one now, and this one's Total Murder. So we've done the twerking, now we can do the total murder. So that's the sort of entirety of the human condition down in two songs. Oh, fucking lovely. My mum, she says this one sounds like George Formby. Which isn't quite what I'm not quite my take on it. I fucking love this. This is amazing. This is. I think, my first repeater radio show, I'm sure this was probably my favourite bit of the whole show. Alkaline, he's made some absolutely fucking amazing tunes in the last, in the last year or so. He's like popcorn a bit. He's a bit of a shamey. So wedded to doing the girl tunes, though. Nothing wrong with doing girl tunes, but it's nice, something a bit more aggressive. To be fair to Alkaline, his voice is so fucking avant-garde, it does tend to counterbalance anything that's slightly cloying in the tunes. We've moved on now to Big Voice with Dark Side. Calls himself Big Voice, but he sounds absolutely tiny here. He sounds like he's about 3 inches tall. Borrower bashment. Sounds like it's recorded in a matchbox or something. He's very underrated though, Big Voice. I think he's great. But he doesn't really add some big hit. He does great stuff with the voice. Fucking weird track, dude. We're on to Rebel 6. This is a leak track, so sometimes it's called 16 with 6, the number 6 and T. Sometimes it's called Weatherman. I think he's got another one on this instrumental, but it's not the same track. I think this instrumental was used by Boy Boy. So that was a huge kind of a Trinidad anthem. I don't know, maybe a year ago, something like that. 18 months. Oh, this is great, man. Oh, we're coming in now with this is a Skillabang and Tommy Lee Sparta together with a track, as you might hear, called Bin Laden. This is, when I heard this, I couldn't believe this was like all my dreams come true. All I've ever wanted was two space alien Jamaicans to keep saying Bin Laden to me over and over again. Couldn't believe my luck when this came out. Oh, and then Tommy Lee Sparta, his first bit in it, he says, "We no carry nunchuckle." I mean, that's his opening gambit. I mean, you can't beat it, can you? This is fucking, that seals the deal for me. Love it. Also, this isn't some weird sort of obscurity. This is like one of the big dancehall tracks of this year. I mean, it came out sort of December last year. We're moving on to Rebel 6 with Quick Evil Part 2. This one's good. I think this is another leak. But even a leak that might come out when he's alive, possibly. Oh, it's amazing. His voice sort of sounds like it's phasing. You know, one dimension to the other or something. Sounds, great. He is good. I think about half his fucking mix is Rebel 6, isn't it? Fuck it, he is good. Wow. Don't even have anything to say about it, it's just amazing. Another Rebel 6. So this is, and it's another leak. This one's John Wick. Instrumental is great on this one, love it. But his voice as well, it sort of sounds like an Indian instrument or something. Like a sarangi or like a, I think, you know, on Pharoah Sanders stuff in the 70s, it's droning a lot of it, like on Elevation. Maybe on another of his live ones, yeah, trying to get this drone. Yeah. Fucking great. I mean, so funny, so it's called John Wick. It's sort of named after that Keanu Reeves film. Oh, I think even the artwork on YouTube put it. I don't know if a fan done it. Okay, so is Rebel 6 head photoshopped onto John Wick body over Keanu Reeves? But it's weird, that film. It's not actually that good, but I think it's just we don't sort of have any kind of proper action films anymore. But I guess sort of, I guess it's all superheroes now, isn't it? So John Wick's become this kind of de facto iconic action film just by virtue of having no competition. So even more Rebel 6 with this one's Dark. But he's wicked, that's why, I mean, I put it in for a reason. He's fucking amazing. There's something kind of almost like possessed about all these voices when they're speaking at one. You know, like in The Exorcist, the Linda Blair I'm sure she's always talking about 9 voices at one. The machines are possessing these dance works. No, that is talking about slap, you know, that kind of hyper tangible verbs they use when they're talking about guns. With a got a very kind of satisfying quality to it. You can really feel it. So we're on to Vibes Cartel with a track called Kremlin. This one's produced appropriately, given the name, by a guy called Russian, who produced a lot of Cartel stuff. He produced that highest level one I played earlier, the other Cartel. How they want to test the best whoever come from Jamaica. They can't, guys, don't worry about it. Wow. Very sad, this one. I find it very very bleak. Very something very haunting about it. Beautiful. I mean, you can sort of hear this lust for glory, you know, in the lyrics. I mean, sort of he's boasting, but I suppose in the context of firstly the sad instrumental and then also the fact that he's in prison. There is that kind of fallen hero tragedy too. This track was also useful in changing the BPM. As we will see, allow me to then start mixing in some crap stuff as well. So this one coming in is Lil God, it's Running Bands. But actually, I think the bit you're going to hear from it is Lil Key, who's his brother. So he's doing a beat. Fucking chromatic, this song. Sounds like a sort of a repressed memory or something. Like chilling. I mean, I think you can sort of, with this, I think you can hear Lil Keed kind of reach the same conclusion, I think, as a lot of dancehall artists have, which is that, you know, you've got the auto tune, just do the most high-pitched, piercing noise you can, and you'll get something interesting out of it. It's great. Yeah. The book's drill, trap, and bash. And as you can tell from the radio show, the bashment side of that equation does seem to get most of my attention. I mean, to be fair, that's because I think trap dance was kind of quite new, fresher in my mind. But I do get the impression, I think, even if you look back over in 5 or 10 years, you might say the track dance was the kind of pinnacle of vocals. Like, that being said, all this shit sound wicked right now. So this one's Lil God It with Instead. So this is an example of what I call frag rap. So for any garage heads out there, you might sort of maybe kind of good shorthand to explain what it is. It's like the Todd Edwardsification of rap. You kind of these very kind of chopped up, sliced and diced sounding vocals. You know, just little interjections of kind of blurting rhythm, like Morse code or something. It was funny, so Lil Got It's kind of a young thug protege. Sort of, I think, people talk about like the kind of stuff in the mid 2010s, like young thug and Future were doing. That gets all the kind of accolades, but I think if you listen back to it now, it doesn't really sound particularly like, I'm thinking like Barter 6 and Future's old string of mixtapes he done in 2015 or whatever. In retrospect, you listen back, it doesn't particularly sound too remarkable. I think this stuff is really actually where you get the aesthetic kind of distilled on it. That being said, after having just flagged off Future, this is his track Oxy. This is fucking I might be talking out the ass there. Again, a bit back to the harem. The harem with this instrumental, I think. Sort of reminds me of Fully Gaza, really. Same sort of sound. But again, more frag rap. You hear it's all kind of voice. The idea of flow is given up. kind of a, instead of flow, which is what traditional rap would have been interested in, this is anti-flow. This is all blockage, interruption, hiccuping, tripping over itself rhythmically, all stops and starts, stalling, the whole thing. But I actually edited out, so Lil Wayne is the first verse on this, and that's this, yet another, it's another track where I think the feature just really falls short. Again, Lil Wayne just sort of sounds so archaic next to what Future is doing this. Playboi Carti, this one with a track called Coding, or Coding Cup sometimes, so this is a leak. I actually tend to be very sort of disparaging of what we could call internet music, or even sort of internet culture. A lot of it's just pretty gross and acid for the most part. Kookiness for kookiness' sake, or weirdness for weirdness' sake, or whatever. But I think this track is sort of undeniable. It does surpass all that. I mean, it's genuinely very, very hallucinogenic, very intoxicating. I mean, it's great. Yeah, I mean, I think most of the music I talk about in the book, I mean, much more from a kind of what you call a populist thing. Not necessarily popular, but kind of coming from a real world society. This one's probably a creation of the internet, but I can't complain, it is very good. We're moving on now to Young Thug and Travis Scott with Yeah Yeah. So this is a leap. Oi, 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 very good. Wowie. Yeah, this was a leak, so I think he had an album, I can't remember what it's called. It's called Jeffrey, I think. The one with the white cover. So this, I think, was supposed to be the lead single. And it got leaked, so they scrapped it from the old album. It's a shame in a way, because I wonder if this had come out, get a proper release, there might have been a whole wave of rap that really copied it. Sort of, this sort of stuff's a slightly unfulfilled future in a way. You don't, you get a bunch of tracks a little bit like this, and then maybe more that somewhat like it, but I think actually it really could have I think the whole genre could have permitted these hyper fragmented rhythms, these sort of amazing vocals. The rhythms are wicked, so we kind of had this complete cognitive rearrangement of it by rhythm. Fuck off, we've done our track. I've done my obligatory other genre stuff. Let's get back to the dance room. So we're back to Bashment with this one coming up. There we go. So that's this one's Fresh King with Banger. Now the name's a bit of a poor name there, because I think it's a reference to Fresh Prince, which is, I'm not sure, not exactly the coolest thing in the world, especially in 2021 or 2020, whenever this was made. But there you go. Fucking wicked track, though. This is really good. This is, I mean, you get a little bit of that kind of post-future slurred lockjaw quality, if I'm going to pretend that there's a thematic cohesion to this mix. Oh, here's good. I mean, this is one of them, I think you get loads of this with music recently. If you didn't know this was from Jamaica, you would think it was like Indonesian or something. I think you get that load, yeah. You know, I think you do get these kind of these pinnacle moments of future music where it does become this kind of weird pan-global thing. You know, like Miles Davis's 70s stuff, where he's quacking in tablas and congas and all sorts of shit. I think this has that quality. Yeah. All right, and then this is the last track of this launch party mix. So this is Alcala with a track called Nah Trust Mankind. So I have when I do mixing, is that I always try and end the mix on something quite poppy. So I'd like to think that my mixes tend to be fairly high velocity and fairly sort of avant-garde or whatever, and then end on something a bit more bubblegum or a bit more sugary. a bit more easy to digest, just as a kind of as a little bit of a sentimental quality. But with this one, I don't know if his voice is just so fucking outrageous that you were so extreme that sort of the intended poppiness kind of get lost because your brain's getting fucking fried by that voice of it. Amazing. I mean, it's not exactly Spice Girls, is it? It's fucking, yeah, he's good. Yeah, lucky to listen to all this stuff. Really fucking lucky. What an amazing moment in musical history. It really is humbling. Well, that was the end of the launch party mix, but I've got a few more minutes to fill up the hour on his radio show, and so I thought I'd already played the trap and abashment part of the book, so I thought I'd end with a little bit of the drill. So this one's AD's AD Anywhere. So any rappers on it are Tookie, FG, Mad L and Scatty. Love this track. I mean, that's the thing. So, I think when I first heard Drill, I think the first thing I thought was Jungle. In terms of I'm talking about UK Drill, not Chicago. Jungle, just in terms of the drums in it. You know, all those kind of rolling snares. Kind of get a lot of the like asymmetric, lopsided kind of snare accents as well. That's the sort of hallmark of Jungle. I mean, then you've got the kind of that's the thing, it's sort of the futurism of Drill, very separate. You know, I've my whole kind of vocal psychedelia thesis for the trap and the dance hall, right back in the book. But of course, Drill don't really fit into that. No auto-tune, as you can hear, for example. Very traditional kind of MC in a way. So I think the futurism, and that's the sort of nice thing about this stuff in a way. So this futurism, I think it is futuristic. I mean, I think it's new. It doesn't sound like any music that was made before. Or it couldn't be mistaken for any music that was made before. But yeah, but what's nice about this, it's less of a clean break from the past, I think. A lot of the basses in Drill, kind of, you could think of them as post-red bass, post-walk bass, post-bassline kind of bassline. Yeah, as I say, the kind of a jungle-esque drum. And then, like, even the vocals, you know, there's a whole lineage of fast chat that goes back from London music. You can see manifesting this. Weird. Talking to Luke Davis, he used to be Heronbone, crime blogger called Heronbone, and he also does he's in my book as well. We have a little chat at the end as well, interview section in the back. But I was talking to he'd listened to I did a history of UK music mix for repeat, and he was listening to that the other day, and he was saying how it all sounds so good, the drill works well, all the stuff before it all fits, and then you just see these awful gap in the middle of road rap, which is where just British people just trying to do proper American style rap. It sounds so boorish. He's right, but luckily Britain managed to pull itself out of the eyes. Anyway, so that's the end of that. Please go buy the book. So you've heard the drill, you've heard the trap, you've heard the bashment, you've heard me yammering on. So the book's out now. Love it, you can go and buy it, and of course keep listening to Repeater Radio. Thank you very much.
Gruppenzahl 1, 5, 6, 7, 6, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, The time is just about 7 p.m. You are listening to WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York, and it's time for another exciting edition of Off the Hook. Good evening to you. Program is Off the Hook. Rob T. Firefly here with you. I am joined by Gila.
You are. Good evening.
And we have some very special guests on out in Signal Land tonight. First of all, we got Alex, who's usually here.
Yes, yeah. Oh, I'm not one of the special ones, Rob?
No. You're one of the regular ones. I'm more excited. You shut up. I want to talk to these other folks.
Well, I was deliberately cast out of a special category when you realized I was still here. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
That makes me feel loved. I get it.
This is how we do.
Special people. You got it. Yep.
Also out there in Signal Land, we have got Efrat Sternberg. Have we got you? We have got you on mute, Efrat Sternberg.
Now I'm here.
Now you're
sorry.
Here. No, welcome to here. We have got Lambda Calculus.
Ahoy, my tunes.
And we have Kusanagi with us.
Hello.
Hello, everyone. And the reason I brought you all here today is because we've got a bit of a special event that I think folks might want to talk about coming up, and you folks are all involved with this in various ways and at various angles, and we're excited about this. Gil and I are also involved,
yes.
And we have some special stuff going on. First of all, what's happening this weekend?
The heat's supposed to break?
The heat is supposed to break this weekend. What else?
What else is happening this weekend? Why is everyone else muted?
Well, I believe that we might have a chance to summon Nikola Tesla.
Nikola Tesla, yes. He lived at the New Yorker Hotel in Midtown
yes.
Manhattan. And that is also, coincidentally, the site of the Hackers on Planet Earth conference this very weekend. The one that, if you don't have your ticket already, you're kind of out of luck, because they're out, they're sold out, that means there's no more. And the virtual tickets as well, I believe, were ended today, and,
yes.
You know, so those of us who are committed to it are, you know, fully committed. And we'll get to talk about that in a little bit, but I wanted to start with a couple of things that are going on in the news. First of all, I would really like to give an extra special welcome out there to everyone listening to us on Delta Airlines Wi-Fi, because that is, as I hear, just, you know, a wonderful place where nothing ever happens, except when a Delta flight was, quote, and this is on an air travel sort of blog called View from the Wing, where they were at a Delta flight hit by hackers after DEF CON Las Vegas. Crew says they jammed the in-flight Wi-Fi. And what appears to have happened is a bunch of people coming home from that other hacker conference, which happened this past weekend, decided to have some fun on the airplane with the Wi-Fi. They sent out a DDoS attack, which basically knocked everyone off the real Wi-Fi. Then they put up another hotspot that was named Delta to get them to connect to that one instead. And it's unclear what they were planning on doing with this or why they did this, if it was for the lulz or they were doing something more evil than that. But, of course, now that they've done that, that's the word on everyone's lips in the news, in everywhere. Fox News has an interesting article about it, as you might imagine. You know, there's been a lot of discourse about this in the sort of hacker sphere online, with some folks saying it was just a harmless prank, some folks saying what kind of idiots would do this on a plane and shake up an airline crew. What do you folks out there think?
Well, hang on, because I fly Delta more often than not, because Delta flies direct to a city where we have family.
Mm-hmm.
So we fly Delta not infrequently,
mm-hmm.
which is fine. And we're used to the spiel where they're like, Delta is on a journey to bring fast and free Wi-Fi to our entire fleet. But unfortunately, the junky regional jet you're on right now isn't part of that plan yet. So it sucks to be you. Please pay us for Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
And people who don't hear that spiel are probably, you know, used to just hopping on the Wi-Fi. And I did read somewhere where someone pointed out that this isn't just so people can work on graphs and check Facebook,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, they alter the flight plan on the Wi-Fi. And you and I were having a discussion about this,
mm-hmm.
because maybe it's naivete on my part,
mm-hmm.
but I don't understand the appeal of doing this sort of thing. I don't understand why you'd want to do that. And maybe that means that I don't belong on this particular program. But I fail to understand why you would want to do this to people. Why, you know, your scientists were so concerned about whether they could, they didn't stop to think whether they should. Just because you can doesn't mean you have to. So I'm never going to try to mess with the in-flight Wi-Fi.
All right. Anyone else have thoughts on this?
I mean, I heard that this was the new origin story for Zero Cool, for the hackers reboot.
Absolutely. I mean, Monday was Zero Cool Day.
It
just so happens. You know, Zero Cool Day, of course, observing the solemn occasion where young Zero Cool crashed 1,507 systems in one day, biggest crash in history. Front page, New York Times, August 10th, 1988. That's from a movie. A movie from Hollywood.
That would sound like a really cool reboot, but I also think that's like, I don't fly Delta very often. I usually fly United because they're a little bit cheaper and they tend to have direct flights to Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, usually, like, things like that make me feel like whoever did this was also probably, like, baby's first DEF CON, probably very fresh-faced kids. They probably thought that they were going to be really cool and cocky. Let's do this big, cool hack source because, you know, lead cred status. And they don't realize, kid, you don't want to really aim that high or even that high at all, because you're going to get yourself into a lot of trouble,
mm-hmm.
with a lot of guys in black suits that are especially going to be waiting right there at the plane when it lands, and they're going to say, all right, come with us, kids. And
yeah.
You're going to be seeing the back rooms of those airports, and you're going to be like, yeah, nobody gets to see these now, do they?
Yeah, I don't think it's your standard sort of, let's, you know, be afraid of making the feds angry. It's an airline, it's an aircraft. There have been some folks online speculating that this could actually affect the safety of the flight itself, which is definitely not something you want to do when you're up in an airplane. And, yeah, so, Alex, what do you think?
Well, I can understand the allure of running a DDoS attack on a plane Wi-Fi network on the way home from a hacker conference after not sleeping and being out and learning about all kinds of interesting things in Vegas on the way home to wherever. But also, you have to remember, these DDoS attacks are so incredibly easy to run. Mm-hmm. My guess is that this person probably ran it from a Flipper Zero. Right? You basically can install firmware that has DDoS attacks programmed right into it. You select the network, you execute the DDoS attack, and then everything on that network deauthenticates. I don't think it actually affects everything on a network, though. I think it's I don't think it affects devices that are connected to 5G, but I don't know. Somebody will correct me or something. I'm sure if I'm wrong on that. But anyway, incredibly easy to run, and then you create your own fake hotspot. Maybe they were going to do this as a joke, or maybe they were really going to try to man-in-the-middle people, but it just seemed to me like it's obvious on the way back from a hacker conference. Mm-hmm. The intention behind this was some kind of tomfoolery as opposed to actual malice. So I hope that they're treated with that type of intention in mind.
I hope so as well, because it does just sound like a bunch of kids being silly on the plane.
It remains to be seen, and I'm sure any other evidence to the contrary will be put out there as we keep an eye on this story. Let's talk a little bit about hackers and learning things and making a nuisance of yourself. Lambda, first of all, I wanted to ask you about the talk you're giving, which we cannot say the entire title of on the radio because it contains one of those words that could mean big trouble for us here in the broadcast industry. But we can call it How We Can All Rewild the Internet. And can you tell us, in family-friendly terms, the basic main idea of what you're going to be talking about?
Yes, I can absolutely do that, and I will do it family-friendly. So I did give a version of this talk at DEF CON to warm up the audience and also for the people who can't really make it to Hope. So I gave it at the Hackerstown Community Village at DEF CON. Seemed to go over very, very well. Everybody seemed to love the energy. The talk is basically going to be talking about how the Internet came to be. So it's going to be a little part historic talk, like the building of the Internet, mm-hmm. some of the early services we used to use, and some of the fun times we used to have on the Internet as kids, because I'm pretty sure that we had all the fun things like web rings and portals, and you make your own little fan sites. You had the early social media where it's just like it was interpersonal and friendly, but you had a bunch of guys with a ton of money mm-hmm. who came by and said, we're going to turn everything to paid services and subscriptions and AI models and algorithms, and we're going to just make people angry and depressed and upset and just pump you full of constantly bad news, bad news, bad news, propaganda, bad news, and then some, and just make each other go at each other's throats, which is not what we really want to have.
Mm-hmm.
It affects children, it affects adults, it's just generally a terrible mess, and I don't really like to see it. And we should, as hackers, start considering that for the next generation of hackers, whether our kids, other people's kids, family friends, family members, whoever, that they don't get left behind with an Internet full of garbage.
Mm-hmm.
That they have a fun Internet, they have a good Internet, no spying, no surveillance, no AI, no tech bros,
right.
None of that stuff. So I'm going to be giving a few brief pointers about tools that you can use to get away from big tech, get away from that AI, get away from big social media, and start cultivating the web again to a way where it was like when we were teenagers, mm-hmm. when it was fun and it was nice to use. So tools that could be like not Google, but maybe like another web service instead of using Chrome, another web browser instead of Facebook or Instagram, use the Fediverse. Those will be things I'll be covering. And, of course, we can't go without talking about Valid at this talk, because Valid, I feel, will be an extremely integral part of rebuilding the web.
Absolutely. Valid is something that we, some time ago, had some of the crew from there talking on this program about. For those unfamiliar, could you give us the the short version of what Veilit is and does and can do.
Okay, so I guess to put it as succinct as possible, Veilit is a node-based network that was designed by the Cult of the Dead Cow, and I'm sure all of us in Hackerland all know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So Cult of the Dead Cow, alongside a few others of us at Hackerstown, we are creating this node-based network where you build a node, you build the network. It is people-powered, it is by the people and for the people, and it is fully private, it is fully end-to-end encrypted, and it can be used for a multitude of purposes. I mean, it's written in C and Rust, so nice and high-level, modern protocols. There are tools like file sharing, MUD, what else? End-to-end encrypted chat. There's tons of tools that are in the works. It's really getting somewhere, and I feel that at DEF CON as well, Veilit made a massive impact. It's not so much a little splash, but a sploosh.
Mm-hmm.
And we really got the attention of a lot of visitors to Hackerstown community, both with our badges, which were small embedded machines that are fully working Veilit nodes,
mm-hmm.
to just telling people about how to build nodes and how to build their own network and how to write tools for it and how to just really make this community come together and really mesh.
It's amazing stuff, and the potential for it to keep growing is amazing. Just watching it grow over the past, I forget how many years it's been since it was unveiled.
It's been 3 years.
3 years, wow! And I think we're all excited to see what comes out of that in the future. And so, what led you to settle on this as a subject to speak about at Hope?
I mean, like anything else, I'm just angry about the state of the internet right now. I'm just very angry about the state of billionaires controlling what is our network and our web, and just ripping it away from us and just destroying it. I'm not a father and I don't have kids, but it's like, if I did, I don't want to leave this internet for them. I want them to have a good internet. I want them to have good tech. I want for the people out there who are growing up in this world now to see what the internet was like when we were there in the beginning and really get to experience that. I don't want them to be left with, you know, whatever these guys are saying.
And, you know, it's funny because this also kind of meshes with something else I've seen going on, where there is increasing interest in retro technology, in doing things the older way. People are, you know, being interested in like a flip phone that's not, you know, a full, you know, touchscreen computer again. People are interested in older computers, older machineries, seeing how things used to work. And I think part of that has to do with the utter bubble and mess of things like computer component prices for those who were interested in building the hottest, latest stuff. You know, prices, shortages, everything else. But also in just a way that recognizes that a lot of what we're seeing now is a lot of noise. A lot of noise,
yeah.
and not a lot of the content or community that some of us have taken a great deal away from as we've used the net in our, you know, in our lives.
Yeah. I mean, I can't begin to tell you how salty I am about the fact that I can't even buy a solid-state drive for one of my laptops to upgrade it, because what was $109 just a year ago has now practically quadrupled in price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was the price of RAM has been steadily coming down over the past 20 years, but the past 1 year or so has undone that. I've seen multiple articles about this floating around where we have just given up all the ground we've gained in terms of memory prices and storage prices and things like that. So we'll keep an eye on where this all goes. I'm definitely excited about your talk. I want to move on to Effie. Effie, you have what I think is a very interesting talk, a very sort of unusual talk for the space, but it really bears going into. Could you tell us a little bit about what your background is and what you're speaking about?
Sure. So I'm Effie Urbelis. I share a last name with another regular on your show. He's my husband. And I am going to be talking about, first of all, my background. I'm a former prosecutor. I was a prosecutor for over a decade, and I worked with special victims. So I work with domestic violence, and I also work with child abuse and sex crimes. And I really started working with, you know, victims of domestic violence, or survivors, as we call them, at the age of 15. So I've been working with survivors since then. So basically over two decades, but I don't want to age myself. Not amazing, but incredible about the shift in the dynamics of survivors and these relationships is that when I started practicing law and when I started working with survivors, it was a statistic of 1 in 4 women and about 1 in 10 men would be victims of intimate partner violence or sexual abuse. That statistic has gone up to 1 to 2 and 1 to 6, respectively, and that changes a lot when you get into LGBTQIA+ community. And also, I'm not taking into account, like, certain ethnic enclaves. And I think that what happens is with the increased usage of technology, it is much easier to accomplish these things and to become stuck in these cycles of violence, and also harder to get away and harder to get out. So, you know, a crime that really has not gotten a lot of attention but is, you know, growing with all this technology is stalking. It's something that's really not talked about, and it's something that's become more and more dangerous for people in these types of relationships. And so I thought it would be interesting to give, to moderate, I should say, my role in this talk is going to be that of a moderator, to moderate a discussion with two old colleagues, one from the Brooklyn DA's office where I started my career, who now is the bureau chief of the Technology and Litigation Bureau at the Brooklyn DA's office, and another colleague of mine from the Bronx DA's office who works in CSAM, Child Sexual Abuse Material and Human Trafficking, and kind of talk a lot about, you know, our experiences with prosecuting technology, how technology plays a role in our prosecutions, and how it plays a role in the dynamics of these relationships. And recently, I became a member of the board of directors for the New York State Coalition Against Domestic Violence, and so, you know, my role there is going to be, again, focusing on technology, focusing on the ever-changing dynamics of these relationships, and you know, overseeing a lot of the domestic violence organizations, or all of them, in New York State. So that's what my talk is going to be. It's going to be a lot of war stories and a lot of discussion about technology within, you know, a question and answer segment, which I think will be really great. And to kind of wrap it up, how people in this community can help, and how they are helping. Go ahead, Alex.
What? I'm not gonna poke holes in it. We're not, you know, this isn't an argument here, you know. Your name does begin with E, though, so it is difficult not to want to just argue with you immediately. So, in any event, you mentioned stalking, though, my lovely wife. What about things like unlawful surveillance and things like that? I mean, I remember when we first met, you were working on some crazy unlawful surveillance cases. I mean, what about that now?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to hear when you talk to the two women I'm going to be presenting with, Sarah and Sarah, one with H, one without, you're going to learn a lot and hear a lot of stories about people who, we talk a lot about these tiles, we talk a lot about these Apple air tags. And how you can control them from afar, and how you can change the labels of them. So, without giving too much away, there was a case that came up recently in Brooklyn about somebody who had a tile and hidden on somebody, and it came up as AirPods. So she constantly thought she was just connecting to AirPods, but really she was just reconnecting to this tag that was, you know, following every movement. And every time she was in the DA's office for, you know, trial practice, she started getting phone calls from this person. And so, you know, when I started as a prosecutor in Brooklyn, when I met Alex, that's correct, I was working on a felony, which included unlawful surveillance, where as we refer to him as a defendant, put hidden cameras all over somebody's apartment and was just surveying her constantly, every single movement she made. And, you know, back then it wasn't stalking, it was unlawful surveillance. But I think now there's an argument to be made that a lot of these unlawful surveillances need to be put under the umbrella of stalking, because I think, you know, it's interchangeable at this point.
And it seems relevant to the hacker community, not only because those of us who aren't doing terrible things need to know how terrible things are done in order to defend against them in our own lives and in the lives of those who are in our lives. But this is also something that maybe does not get enough talking about out in the open sphere like this. And I think it's very important to bring that to events like HOPE.
Yeah, I think so. And I, you know, and you know, additionally, I had a thought, and I think I possibly just lost it. But I think it has something to do with what you said. So I will. This is what happens as I get older. I forget things. But I did have a point.
But no, to echo that, I was talking to my office mate this morning, and I was talking about tonight and who we had on the panel with us and the talks that people are going to be giving, and telling her about this particular talk, what's coming up, what it all implies. And she said, I hadn't thought about any of this. This talk is so incredibly important, and while it may not necessarily seem like the first top of mind thing you'd see at a hacker conference, I'm really glad is not the word, because I wish we didn't have to have these conversations, but the fact that this is coming to this community, I think, is really important and really significant. And thank you for bringing this, Effie.
Thank you. And also, like, you know, a lot of people who are, I think this is what I was meant to say before, in this Bolt Bureau in Brooklyn, and I think there's comparable ones in DA's offices, you know, not only in New York, but across the country, that a lot of hackers are involved in these, because you need people who have this hands-on experience and know what to look for and how to look for it and how to get rid of it, you know, and how to warn against it. So I think it could be great opportunities to contribute.
Effie, have you attended HOPE before, or will this be your first?
Of course I have. I've attended HOPE with our children. I've attended HOPE pregnant, and with our young one when he was a baby. I've gone to almost every HOPE. I've really enjoyed it. I have not learned how to you know, the lock picking, but our oldest definitely has and has his own kit. I absolutely love HOPE.
I'm still no good at the lock picking. I've tried it at every con over decades and decades, and that's one skill that I'm completely failing at picking up still in any usable way. But I've got a cool set of picks.
Yeah. Don't feel bad. I kind of, like, very hit or miss with lock picking as well. It's like, sometimes I get it, sometimes I don't. It's like, it's real luck of the draw with me.
It is a popular hobby, though, in our scene. Kusanagi, you are here, and you have also been just an butt-kicking HOPE mainstay for many, many years. You can be seen a lot at the info desk and helping to wrangle things. And there's another event that that you're involved with that Gil and I will be wrangling. And but can you talk a little bit about your involvement at HOPE and just the sorts of things that we can see you doing this time around?
Sure. I'm still going to be chained to the info desk. Unfortunately, my contract doesn't allow me to go much further than that. But the past several years, I've been helping organize the conference. I'm also now the main volunteer coordinator. So if you're volunteering for the conference, I have been the person you've been talking to. It's the first time you're hearing my voice. I'm a lot squeakier in person, I promise. So just as a quick shout out, if you are still interested in volunteering, you can go to https volunteers with an s.hope.net and sign up for an account and sign up for your shifts. It's pretty easy. If you have any issues, you can email me up until tomorrow, but after that it's going to get a little hectic because I am juggling a lot of stuff. I work at the info desk, so what I do is I answer everybody's questions. I manage to know things. Our slogan at the info desk is, if anyone knows stuff about stuff, it's info desk. And not only do I handle questions in person, I handle email questions and matrix. And if people have me in a group chat and they ping me, I get them there too. So I'm in all the places, all the times, managing the different volunteer roles for the conference. Yeah, that's pretty much what I do right now. And I work alongside the operations, the security team to help make sure that they're stationed
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it does at the same time when I say it out loud. Mm-hmm. Or it doesn't feel like a lot, but when I say it out loud, it's like, oh, geez, that's why I have so many gray hairs.
Yeah, and so, when did you start doing this stuff? It feels like it's been forever. I'm sure it feels like forever to you. But.
Yeah, it's actually my 10th year.
Your 10th year.
Being a volunteer and HOPE attendee. I've volunteered every HOPE I've attended, and I became a lead for, it's actually on my resume, I became lead for InfoDesk in 22, mm-hmm. and then started managing the volunteer stuff, really, in 24. So this is my third year volunteer coordinator.
Excellent. And so what are your feelings about the new space? Have you been in to see the space? Or?
Yes, I have. It is so pretty. Mm-hmm. It's so nice. We got to, me and the team got to do a walk around, I believe it was in May, and we got to see the Grand Ballroom, which is where Hackers Got Talent is going to be hosted this year,
mm-hmm.
The Crystal Ballroom, which is also very lovely, the workshop rooms, which are also nice, they're just a little smaller, but overall I think it's a great space. It's nothing like, it's not as big as Penn, but there's like kind of like a mystique and an aura to it, you know? It's very, like, hand-wavy. But I got good vibes when I was in there, and I was like, all right, yeah, I could see things going really, really well here. And I'm excited for it.
That looks good.
You know, when we were there, and I got to wander around for a bit, to see the Grand Ballroom. I can't remember, I think it's the Grand Ballroom, right? There's one room that has this very kind of ornate, mm-hmm. massive sculpture on that kind of takes up one of the walls. It's kind of part sculpture, part mosaic painting, very interesting and kind of new wavy type of looking, but odd, right? And there's mm-hmm. a special history to that is really kind of fascinating, over and above what went on there historically at the New Yorker Hotel, obviously with Nikola Tesla having lived and died there. There's some other really interesting history there, and I'm hoping that some of our listeners or attendees will look up the origin of that particular sculpture, painting type thing. It's kind of fascinating. I don't want to give it away. But there's some kind of weird, spooky type, curious history of that hotel.
Yeah. There absolutely is. That's probably why I like it so much, because I like the spooky kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, somber. And
that's going to be very fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something also, I think, those of us who enjoyed Hotel Pennsylvania liked the, you know, sort of ratty, spooky aspects of it, but, you know, that place is no more, but this is mm-hmm. right around the corner, and mm-hmm. it promises to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm less concerned about washing the New Yorker off me than I was about washing
yeah.
the Hotel Penn off me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because, like, Hotel yeah. Pennsylvania, I still remember, like, you don't know what those marks and stains are on the walls and the rug. You're like, yeah, I'm going to have to go home and really do my laundry.
You walk around with one of those UV lights. Why is this blue? What does
yeah.
it mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
Trust me, and I carry one of those UV lights to every hotel I ever go to.
Well, we expect a full report when you get to this one. But now, Hotel Penn was, in retrospect, we can say kind of a dump, but it was our dump. And it was a historically mm-hmm. significant dump, and I still miss it.
I do, too. But it feels nice that we're actually coming back to a hotel again.
Yeah, a hotel yeah. with some history behind it, some mm-hmm. interesting history.
Yeah.
So, Kusanagi, you are mm-hmm. also involved with, as we mentioned, the Hackers Got Talent event.
Yes.
We spoke a little bit about this in previous weeks on this program, but how would you describe Hackers Got Talent, which is also in its 10th year this year?
Yes, it's a very special year. And I've actually been a part of it for all of this entire time. Mm-hmm. So I have 100% attendance rating, unlike other people. I always joke, like, on stage that I'm being dragged into it, but honestly, it's one of the most fun things that we get to do. It's actually one of the most popular events of all of HOPE, and I'm really proud of that. Like, it's, you know, finally the one thing I get to do where I can kick back and relax and have other people, you know, figuratively but literally as well, dance for me. You know, get to enjoy that.
Absolutely. It is happening 10 p.m. on Saturday. and in the Crystal Ballroom, which sounds cool.
No,
and
it is not. Actually, it's not in the Crystal Ballroom.
Oh,
the schedule says it's in the Crystal Ballroom.
I believe it's going to be changed to the Grand Ballroom.
Oh, okay,
because
well,
in true
grand.
Hackers Got Talent fashion, mm-hmm. it's so janky that we can't even get the room right.